Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. People who have been involved in and supportive of the protesters in Ferguson have been getting most of the publicity in recent weeks, but a little bit later we'll meet two Ferguson women who say there is another side. But first, during his more than two decades as St. Louis County prosecuting attorney, Bob McCullough has been no stranger to the hot seat. He has been criticized for prosecutorial decisions on more than one occasion. Nonetheless, overall public support has been strong, as has been reelected five times since he assumed office in 1991. He is unopposed in the November election. McCullough has been subjected to criticism here and elsewhere for his handling of the investigation into the shooting death of Michael Brown by a Ferguson police officer 6 weeks ago. McCullough is supervising the grand jury probe of that shooting and has refused demands from some that he step aside from that role. Critics suggest he cannot be impartial in this case. Bob McCullough joins me in studio. Bob, nice to have you with us. Thanks for
coming. Thank
you.
Thanks for having me.
Harry Truman said, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen.
He's a smart man.
How hot is it for you these days?
It's certainly been interesting for the past few months. And we're very mindful of everything that's going on and the concerns that people have, including the concerns of some who feel that I can't be fair or won't be fair in this situation. So we're doing what we can to assure everyone, and some will never be convinced. Some have already made up their mind as to what should happen and what the situation is. But to let everybody know just how the system works, how the process works, and that it will be as open and certainly complete and fair as possible.
But if there is a perception out there, Bob, that this is an unfair process for whatever reason, wouldn't it make sense for you to step away from the investigation just to eliminate that?
You know, if there was an across-the-board perception or a significant or even a majority of people who had that perception, you know, it might be something to think about. But certainly that just doesn't exist. There is certainly a very vocal group and vocal individuals who for whatever purpose, are alleging that I can't be fair or won't be fair. And then it's just – you don't just walk away from something because someone criticizes what you're doing. I'm very comfortable in knowing that what we're doing is the right thing to be doing. We're presenting absolutely every bit of evidence that there is, every witness who has anything to say about the case, whether they saw this or they saw that, they saw it from this angle or that angle, the physical evidence, the medical evidence, all of that's being presented to the grand jury, and completely. And so I'm very comfortable that it is a fair and complete process.
How unusual is it to have the person who is being investigated, in this case Officer Wilson, testify before the grand jury?
Well, it's not unusual to ask someone who may be a target to testify. It is unusual to have someone who is a target actually testify, yes. But, it's certainly not unheard of that in some situations the potential target or potential defendant in the case may think, they want to step up in front of the grand jury and say, here's my side.
Going back to this perception of fairness and sure. unfairness, that has been the spark that has ignited many of the demonstrations in Ferguson.
Well, I mean, it really hasn't. I think it's an excuse for that. You know, there are plenty of protesters who legitimately are protesting, and we encourage that. You know, the people come out and express their opinions. There are issues here that have to be addressed and have to be resolved and have been in the past. They've been addressed. They've been raised in the past. But the fairness, in anyone, sparking anything, I've always been a believer that criminal activity is the responsibility of the person committing that crime. It's not caused by someone else. It's not something, I'm doing or not doing that is causing somebody else to go out and throw a brick through a business window and go in and steal everything they can find. That's just not a legitimate complaint.
Was there ever any moment during all of this in which you said, gee, maybe I should step aside?
No, there really hasn't been. And, I've been in situations before. I mean, I'd point out, I have been the prosecutor for 24 years and recently reelected. I don't have an opponent in November, so through the primary. So I will start another term, a seventh term in January. My background certainly has not been a secret. People know that, and so people understand what my background is and that I have a family background in law enforcement, lots of people in law enforcement, the situation of my father, who was a police officer killed in the line of duty. That's all been out there, and there's never been an issue about my fairness or my integrity, until all of a sudden this comes up now. And it's not like we've never prosecuted police. People mm-hmm. tend to, the ones who want to espouse that particular theory, ignore the fact that over the years we've prosecuted dozens of officers for a variety of offenses, some committed on duty, some off duty. But we're not concerned with the position or the occupation of an individual. We're concerned with their conduct.
Of course, your father's death is what is pointed to time sure. and time again as a reason why people perceived that you could not be fair in a situation like this.
Well, and I think perceive is the key word there, Don, mm-hmm. because it's the ones who espouse that, do have that perception. Some, as I said, legitimately, some for their own purposes, political or otherwise. But what they kind of miss, they make that jump from the fact that my father was a police officer who was killed in the line of duty to 50 years later now, I can't be fair when there's a police officer involved. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's the situation, then I'd have to recuse myself from every case because there are police officers involved and police officer credibility involved in every case that we practically every case that we prosecute. So including cases in which we've prosecuted police officers. And as I said, dozens of them, for on-duty and off-duty criminal activity.
Isn't there an inherent conflict of interest for a prosecutor in prosecuting police officers? I mean, you have to depend on cops to help you make your case.
No, I mean, there really isn't an inherent conflict mm-hmm. in it. Because, excuse me, I said we've done that. And if you kind of think it through and look at it, you think, well, then who are you going to appoint? If I walk away from it, you appoint another prosecutor from another jurisdiction. Well, that prosecutor has the same issue then, with different officers perhaps, but the same theory is there. Do you appoint someone who's not a prosecutor, and now you've got somebody who has no idea what they're doing prosecuting the case? Or do you appoint someone who is very anti-police and has demonstrated that? So it's no, the people have entrusted me with the responsibility of prosecuting violations of state law within St. Louis County, and that's a responsibility I take very seriously and won't walk away from it.
There have been suggestions, of course, that a prosecutor be brought in from another county or that a special prosecutor, even in your case here, mm-hmm. that's been proposed. That would seem to make some sense on the surface of it to have that in, particularly in police cases.
Well, as I said, though, who's going to do that? Yeah. I mean, what prosecutor with some experience has never been involved with police officers? So we're different branches and we have different responsibilities. And even though we work very closely together, every prosecutor in every district, every county in this country works closely with local law enforcement. You have to. It's like saying that, on the east side, when some judges were in trouble, that the prosecutors shouldn't have been involved in that because they have to work with judges. Well, those things are there, but that does not in and of itself present a conflict.
Unless, of course, they come from someplace else and they're not dealing with police officers that they would be dealing with in their own jurisdiction.
Well, they're still going back and dealing with police officers, and so it's
all right. How much influence does a prosecutor have in a grand jury situation?
Well, the prosecutor can have lots of influence. I've heard some of the stories, some former prosecutors talking about, well, I presented a case in, I went in with a particular result in mind and I presented the evidence in a way to get that result. And if anyone did that and does that, then if they still have a law license, they ought to turn it in because that's not how you do it. Yeah. We have no impact. We have no involvement in selecting the grand jury. We don't know who's going to be in that on that grand jury until the judge who has picked that grand jury from the, almost 800,000 eligible people in St. Louis County, they send that over to the prosecutor's office so we can prepare for that. And they're given a charge by that. And the grand jury knows that they're an independent operation. We are there to present evidence, to bring in witnesses and to be their legal advisor, but the judge is, in effect, their boss.
I ask that because one of the headlines of the day today, Senator Nasheed has proposed that and others have as well, suggested that the grand jury decision in this particular case is going to be delayed until after the election because it can influence the election. Your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that, you know, there's nothing I'm going to say that's going to dissuade Senator Nasheed from anything she says. Whether she truly believes it or not is irrelevant, and I suspect she doesn't believe half of what she says. But it furthers her gain, her position, or at least she thinks it fosters her position somewhat. In this case, we are presenting, and it is unusual because instead of the lead investigator coming in and saying, well, here's what witness A had to say, here's what witness B had to say, those witnesses are coming in. Because this grand jury's term and what they had planned on expired in early September, we're now working around their schedule. You know, they've been very good about it and said, listen, we can all get together on this date for, you know, this afternoon and evening or this morning. And so we work around that schedule, and we're presenting such voluminous amounts of evidence that that it's going to take some time. And so mid-October was an aspirational date 2 months ago, and now that we're into it and we see how things are going and where and the amount of evidence and information, then it's pretty clear now that it's going to be closer to mid-November. Now, it may be the first or second week. It may be a little before that. It may be a little after that. We just we'll go with that as it occurs.
It's yet another one of these situations, though, that creates the impression that we've been talked about earlier.
Well, it creates the impression that somebody wants to put out the yes. I mean, if Senator Nasheed, you know, wants to now jump on this and say, well, you're delaying it until after the election, there isn't anything I can do about that, you know. And you know, all I can do is what I've been elected to do, what I've been entrusted by the people of St. Louis County to do. And, you know, Senator Nasheed can do what she feels is appropriate.
Do you think if the grand jury decision came down before the election that regardless of which way it went, it would influence the election somehow?
You know, I don't think that I haven't given that a whole lot of thought, but I really don't think that it would because, pretty much a lot of people have decided where they're going already. What should happen, some have decided what should happen and what will be justice if it doesn't or an injustice if it doesn't happen and the other route. So I'm not sure it has a or will have a significant impact before, after, or on Election Day.
But, of course, it already has become part of the political story.
I mean, yes, it has become an issue in the election, and that's kind of what I'm talking about is that it's already there. So whatever impact it's going to have regardless of when the grand jury reaches their final determination.
Have to take a break now. Our guest in studio is County Prosecutor Bob McCullough. We're talking about the grand jury process in St. Louis County relating to the Darren Wilson case and the shooting in Ferguson a little more than 6 weeks ago. Come back and we'll take more questions from We'll take questions from our listening audience as well. We have a number of people who are calling in for Bob McCullough. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll continue our conversation with County Prosecutor Bob McCullough in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Top political and law enforcement leaders from St. Louis discussed ideas to help the region's law enforcement agency become more diverse today. Missouri Attorney General Chris Koster hosted the roundtable discussion at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. A coalition of African-American leaders in North St. Louis County will endorse a candidate for St. Louis County Executive this afternoon. Democrat Steve Stenger has come under fire for his support of County Prosecutor Bob McCullough, whose department is handling the grand jury investigating Brown's killings. And Missouri State representatives are holding a hearing today in Jefferson City to review management trooper training and a 2011 merger between the Highway and Water Patrols. The review follows the death of a 20-year-old handcuffed man who drowned May 31st in the Lake of the Ozarks. Lawmakers now question whether the merger overwhelmed troopers and saved the state money. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with County Prosecutor Bob McCullough. Some of our news staff has just indicated, Bob, as you heard, that I may have misquoted Senator Nasheed today. I don't think I did, but if I did, I apologize. But her concern concerns about the influence over the election are not solely her own. We've heard that from other people as well. Sure. Let's go to the phones and get some of our listeners into the conversation. We'll begin with Mark. He's calling from Alton, Illinois. Go ahead, Mark.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and thanks for taking my call. I'd like to ask Mr. McCullough if in Missouri, grand jury proceedings are supposed to be secret.
Yes, by statute, everything pertaining to the grand jury is confidential unless and until the court allows or orders the release of any information.
And I was also wondering whether or not it's common procedure in Missouri for a defendant to testify before a grand jury.
Well, it's not unheard of, certainly, and potential targets in an investigation are often invited, seldom appear.
Okay, well, I'm just curious why it is this particular defendant was invited to testify before the grand jury. What circumstance prompted that?
Well, what prompts that is that you know, we have an obligation, of course, to present a full and complete accounting of the case. And so in a lot of cases, not just this one, we have extended an opportunity for it. We can't compel a target or a defendant in a case to come in and testify, but we can offer that opportunity to them. On occasion, they take that opportunity. I'd always love to have a statement from a potential defendant or target in a case.
Okay, and then I don't want to take up too much time here because I'm sure you have other callers that you'd like to take. But I do want to understand what circumstances prompted this particular officer to have to come and testify before the secret proceedings. Did your office invite him?
Yes, we extended the opportunity to him through his attorneys to come in and testify. And we do that not just in police cases, but in other cases in which we'd like to hear from the potential defendant. But rarely do they actually accept.
Thank you, Mark, for the call. Question here related. If Officer Wilson weren't a police officer, wouldn't the eyewitness testimony be sufficient to prosecute?
Well, it's, you know, I wish things were as simple as that. In this particular case, and part of the reason that we're presenting all the witnesses is that we have witnesses who were looking at the same thing but saw very different things, at least according to their various statements. And so that's, I think, important. The fact that there is a police officer involved does change things a bit because in some situations, by statute, police are authorized to use force. And so there's always a question of, is this a legitimate use of force or was it not a legitimate use of force? And that's a question the grand jury has to answer because that may determine whether it's a criminal act or not.
How many people do you think will be testifying before the grand jury?
You know, that I mentioned earlier that everything about the grand jury is confidential, and so I've not gone into detail about how many or how many have or how many will altogether or when or where for that matter. But I have said and continue to say that anyone who has made a statement, who saw anything, who has something to say, that, you know, I think we have most of the we've identified most of those people. Most have been contacted. And all will be, invited to the grand jury, brought into the grand jury, subpoenaed if necessary, to testify. And anyone who hasn't come forward, you know, we still urge them to do that. They can contact us. They can contact the federal government, contact the U.S. Attorney, the FBI, because they are running a very parallel investigation, different and looking at different options, but the same information, and it's all being shared.
I want to take a question from one of our listeners relating to the FBI investigation. But just to be clear in my own mind, you say that you think most of the people have been talked to, that it's a big investigation. Again, is it likely then that you could have it wrapped up by early November before the election?
Well, again, that is the goal is to have it completed and to the grand jury for their decision as expeditiously as possible without rushing through anything and without giving everyone the opportunity to, you know, any witness who has information to do that. You know, I have to understand that we're not only working around the grand juror's schedule, but around the witness's schedule too. And so, and some witnesses are, I don't want to say reluctant, but you know, have a little more of an issue trying to find the appropriate time or time to come in.
You know, I almost hate to say this because I don't want to people to misunderstand it, but this seems like a relatively simple situation. I mean, obviously there were a number of people out there,
right.
But it's a, you know, it's a, it looks fairly cut and dried to me. Why so long? Why so many people?
Well, here's part, because there are an awful lot of people who saw an awful lot, and they saw different parts of it. And as I said earlier, some were looking at the same thing and have different versions of what they saw. And so nothing's ever as simple as it might look. I mean, it's always, and as a prosecutor and as grand jurors, they don't have the luxury of just saying, hey, here's what I read in the paper. That's good enough for me. Let's go with it. So, you know, you have to keep in mind that at this point and up until they make a determination, only the 12 people on the grand jury will have heard every bit of evidence. Nobody else has heard a single word of evidence, but only those 12 people have heard it all and will base their determination on that evidence. Anyone else who's got an opinion now as to what should happen, what did happen, and what the result ought to be hasn't heard a single word of evidence. Nothing.
It's the parallax view. Two people watching the same incident from different angles see different things.
Sure.
Yep.
And that's not uncommon. I don't want to think that's unique to this case. It isn't.
Back to the phones. Patrick in St. Louis, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. I would like to hear some of your insight about the federal investigations pertaining especially to the crime lab from last year. And any work that your office did prior to those FBI investigations coming up. Also, with respect to Jennings, the police department being dissolved by a federal investigation. Also, Charlack, I would like to know how much work your office put into the corruption investigations pertaining to the mayor and former police chief there. My statement is, in your jurisdiction, a police commissioner, the chief of county police, and now the attorney general of the United States have shown you how it's done. And in 1990, Bob, I was in your campaign office at the behest of my father, Harry Ritchie, to talk to you about working on your campaign. And as I told you then, and as I told my father, there's a way better chance that I will be demanding your resignation than me ever working philosophically on the same team as you. I told you then that crimes by police require more work than a cozy relationship with internal affairs and police union. And let me remind listeners that Bashar al-Assad was resoundingly reelected this year, and Putin hasn't lost in quite a while, sir.
Well, there are a couple. First, I was pointing out what he's absolutely wrong about. First of all, the Jennings Police Department was not dissolved by any action of the federal government. The Jennings mayor and board of aldermen voted to dissolve the department and contract with the county police department. As far as Charlack goes, you know, he needs to check up on a few things, get his facts straight. The mayor has already pled guilty and been sentenced and gone away on his corruption charges. And the former police chief has a variety of charges pending and is set for trial later this month. So, and I forget the other one he had, but and I have to confess, I don't recall a conversation I had in 1990.
Well, one thing we know for sure, he's not going to be working on your next campaign.
I think that's a pretty safe bet.
I think so. Let's take another call here. We'll have Jonathan in St. Charles County join us. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hi, how you doing today? I have a question in regards to how could the prosecuting presented, you know, the issue in such a way that pretty much people didn't take a biased opinion, where they feel like, you know, the issue wasn't handled properly, where people started pointing the finger at one another, you know, from a government perspective, where the people could actually wait to everything be presented in such a way where it still have a neutral viewpoint.
I assume you're talking about, I'm not exactly sure, but I think the presentation of the information, the evidence to the grand jury, that's...
Well, just the information that, you know, you see that's presented through, you know, different, when you come to the mic and you present the information, how you work in the case from the prosecuting standpoint, where pretty much there's no finger pointing done at anybody, but just sticking to the case in regards to the issue at hand. It seems like that's hasn't been the biggest focus as it should have been, so people are taking certain viewpoints and not really sticking to the issue of what the problem really is.
Well, we've done absolutely everything we can to stick to that issue and try to avoid some of the distractions that have been going on with that. And we're mindful, of course, of what goes on in Ferguson in the evening and the various protests. And again, I'm a huge proponent of the First Amendment. People should get out and express their opinions on everything, but do it in a, of course, a nonviolent manner. But my responsibility is to present the evidence to the grand jury. Keep in mind, the grand jurors, unlike a trial jury, the grand jury gets to ask all the questions they want to ask. They get to ask for evidence if they want to hear from someone in particular or see something in particular. They ask for that, and we're there to work for them, basically, and bring that information in, which is what we do. So Bob, we're staying focused on that.
Bob, do you have any concerns that if there no indictment is handed down, that there will be more demonstrations?
Well, I think, you know, you'd have to have your head in the sand to think that regardless of what the end result is, that there won't be any demonstrations. There will be. And again, we encourage demonstrations, but we encourage demonstrations that are done in a nonviolent manner. People want to express their opinion, they can express it. I'm very confident that whatever the end result of the grand jury is, the grand jurors are pouring their hearts and souls into this. And we'll make a determination, a decision based upon all the evidence.
Well, I'm sure you're well aware that the speculation is overwhelming in the community here that he's not going to be indicted.
Well, you know, I know that there's – you hear that a great deal, but I don't know that that's, you know, overwhelming if you walk down the street and talk to people with that, you know, that it would be as overwhelming. That may be the talk on some shows and coming out of some people. But I think, you know, I think if people, and as I said, we'll do everything we can to make it as open and clear and complete as possible so that people can have confidence in that. You know, and I do want to talk just a little bit about the system itself, the grand jury system. Most people have no idea where a grand jury comes from, but the grand jury first is selected by the judge, and it's a different judge for each term. And the grand jurors or potential grand jurors are selected at random out of the jury pool, the trial jury pool. That pool in St. Louis County is about 750 or plus thousand people, and they're picked randomly out of that pool, interviewed by a judge, and the judge is looking for that cross-section of St. Louis County. They want that, and they're required to do that by statute, to have a representative cross-section of the county. So on every grand jury, there's racial diversity, there's a gender diversity, age, residents, you know, they're north, south, west, in municipalities, out of municipalities, large ones, small ones, every aspect of the county, any demographic category you can think of is going to be represented on that on this grand jury and on every other grand jury.
If there is no indictment, you've said that all records of the grand jury process will be released. How quickly can you get that material out?
We are working on that as we go. You know, the technology can be an amazing thing. And so everything first is, as I said before, and this isn't, you know, revealing any grand jury secret, everything is being recorded. All the questions, all the answers, whether they're by prosecutors or by grand jurors, the answers given by the witnesses, all of that's being recorded and that's being prepared. It's also being shared with the federal government for their investigation. And the judge has agreed that, first of all, if there is an indictment of any charge, then all the information will come out during the course of the prosecution. If there is no indictment, normally it's a closed record, it's a closed file, unless the judge agrees to release it. And the judge has told me that she will order that everything be released. So everything will be, and it will be, I don't know about simultaneously, but very, very close in time.
Another call. This time it'll be Nelson calling from St. Louis County. Go ahead, Nelson.
Well, thanks for taking my call. With there's so much distrust in the county police and in the prosecutor's office, why wouldn't, whenever a police officer is involved in a shooting, because police officers work so closely with the prosecutor's office for the other case that you have, why wouldn't it be just standard protocol to just go ahead and appoint a special prosecutor?
And who would that be?
Well, I don't know.
That's kind of the point. I mean, the point is that, are you going to appoint someone with experience as a prosecutor? And if you do, then you've got the same potential problem that is there, that if you see that as a problem. And if it's someone who has no experience as a prosecutor, Then you know you've got someone with no experience, and so the voters have expressed their confidence in my ability to be fair, and they've done it repeatedly, including in early August. And so and I understand, and believe me, I don't just ignore the concerns that people have that I may not be fair, but all I can do is assure them that we'll be fair and it will be open. And as I said, absolutely everything, everyone will have access to all the information, everything that was presented to the grand jury. And in addition to that, you'll be able to hear how it was presented. So
let me ask it this way.
Yes, sir.
Has there been a situation in the past where there's been a special prosecutor appointed, and how was that done?
There has been, and here's how it's done. When there is a conflict, and when there's a conflict, then I file a motion with the court saying here's a conflict and here's what that conflict is, and ask the judge to appoint a special prosecutor. That special prosecutor is almost always a prosecutor from a surrounding county or nearby who doesn't have that conflict. And that's generally if there's a relative involved. We've had cases where we've prosecuted relatives of employees of the office, or I may have a close relationship or somebody in the office a close relationship, or we hire somebody who worked for a defense firm, and they represent this guy. And so when there are real conflicts, yes, and that's how it works by law.
Could a federal prosecutor be brought into a situation like this?
Well, there are federal prosecutors involved, not at the state level, but no. Federal prosecutors prosecute federal violations of federal statutes. The state prosecute state violations. So, right. No.
Okay. Another call. We'll bring in Sonny calling from St. Louis. Sonny, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you doing today, Bob? Cool.
I'm just fine. You?
Good. So I'm doing all right. This case represents African Americans, obviously, and the people that keep you in office, Bob McCall, the majority are white people. So why would you want to stay on a case in which the demographic of the people who this case concerns do not trust you? African American people do not trust you, Bob McCall, and the African American young boy was murdered. So how can you be fair? Your father was killed by a black man, and then you made it your business to become a St. Louis County prosecutor. You wanted to be a cop, but you couldn't because of your leg. So why is it that you want to stay on this case unless you have ill intentions?
Sonny, thank you for the call. I think we've covered some of this ground, but go ahead and respond, Bob.
Well, as I respond to it, it's that clearly when she said this young man was murdered, then she's made her determination, and there isn't anything I can say that would dissuade her. I will say this. There certainly are members of the African-American community who have great concerns and express those concerns in this situation. But I represent all of St. Louis County. I don't represent white St. Louis County or black St. Louis County. I represent all of St. Louis County, and for 24 years, there's never been a question about my ability to be fair and impartial in these cases, and now all of a sudden there is. And just on this one case, even though we've prosecuted police officers before, I mean, I don't like people who commit crimes, whether they're doctors or lawyers, and we've prosecuted doctors and we've prosecuted prosecutors. Yeah, so there's just nothing there to indicate that I cannot and or will not be fair in this situation.
This is
I go back to my father being killed. It mattered not that he was a police officer or that he was killed by a black man. What was important is that he was my father and he was taken from the family. And that's the loss that every family feels when they lose someone to violence. And if anything, this has made me an advocate for victims of violence. And if you check my record, absolutely. I've been a prosecutor most of my professional career, and I've been a very strong advocate for victims of violence as a result of that. Whether it's, beefing up the victim services unit within the office, the various victims' rights groups that I'm a member of and a board member in most that's what I've dedicated my professional life to.
You've indicated before what I'm going to ask next is quite peripheral. You've indicated before that people have made up their mind with regard to the election. But do you have any concerns that your continued presence in this situation is going to cost or could cost Steve Stenger the election?
I don't. I haven't. I'll be honest with you. I haven't given that any thought, and I won't give it any thought. I mean, I don't think that it will, to tell you the truth, but But, you know, it's I have a responsibility and I have a job to do. And, you know, that if people want to take that and you know, react in some other fashion, you know, then that's the way it is. That's there's, you know, that's just the way it happens. That's the way elections go. And people are free to vote their conscience.
We have a call here, but not time to take it. It's from Ira. But he asks, has a police report been submitted in the shooting of Michael Brown?
No. The police report has not been completed yet. Normally, what would happen, and that's a very good question, and I'm glad he brought that up. What happens is in the normal course of things, if there is such a thing, the police would complete the investigation, which is pretty much done. They would prepare the report. They would transcribe all the statements. They would have everything done, the photographs, the medical examiner's evidence. All that would be prepared in a report and a packet brought to our office. We would review it. Then it would be presented to the grand jury, and it would in all likelihood be no more than a few witnesses, but primarily the lead investigator. In this case, now that all those things are finished while they're preparing the actual report, we're presenting evidence to the grand jury. Those statements that are there and the transcripts are being prepared and the like. So that's kind of ongoing. It's all going on at the same time.
And yet, you know, I think a lot of people would wonder, it seems to be taking an inordinate amount of time to get all this stuff together.
You know, and it really isn't. When people see the massive amount of information and the thoroughness and completeness of all this investigation, I mean, there were even things that were, you know, still going on as we speak in gathering some information. It's not uncommon that when you talk to one witness, that leads you to another witness or it leads you to something else, and then the police will go out and complete that aspect of it.
We're going to have to leave it there. Bob McCullough, thanks so much for coming in and
my pleasure.
Subjecting yourself to our questions and the questions of our listeners.
Anytime. I think anybody in a public office should do this.
All right. Well, we are grateful that you spent some time with us. Bob McCullough, County Prosecuting Attorney. Coming up, two Ferguson residents who want to make sure their side of the Ferguson story doesn't get lost in the headlines. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.